Welcome to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, episode 96, with Sarah Kornack and Bethann Schwamberger. Today on the show, we're talking with Lacey Boggs. She's a ghost blogger who really knows her stuff when it comes to finding your voice and content creation. You can find Lacey at laceyboggs.com. I hope you enjoy the little blooper I kept in for you this time. Lacey has lots of great stuff to say, so let's get started.
You're listening to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, practical business advice for startup moms.
Today on the podcast, we are pleased to welcome Lacey Boggs of the Content Direction Agency. Lacey is a ghost blogger, but also helps bloggers find their voice and discover their true identity. She lives with her husband and daughter in Denver, Colorado. Welcome to the show, Lacey.
Thank you so much for having me.
Lacey, could you begin by telling us a little bit more about yourself, your family, and your business?
Sure. So about 5 years ago, I was the associate editor for a hyper-local magazine here in Colorado, and it was a great job. It's a lot of fun to work at a magazine. I was also their food editor, which is, you know, a great job if you can get it, but it was a lot of work. I was working 60-plus hours a week, and then I got pregnant and realized that that was not how I wanted my life to look with a baby. I also was not making a whole lot of money as a magazine editor and realized that, you know, for infant childcare, it was going to be more than half my salary going to childcare to spend no time with my child. That sounded terrible. So I decided to quit my job and try something different. And, you know, the first thing I tried, I was a food writer, so it seemed natural to start a food blog, which I did. And it did really well in terms of I grew an audience fairly quickly. I landed some amazing guest posting gigs. I was guest posting for one of Martha Stewart's blogs for a while there, but I wasn't making any money from it. I chose the wrong niche. I chose a niche of foodie moms who want to live like a foodie on a budget. And let me just tell you, if your niche is people on a budget, they don't want to spend money with you. So that was my first business lesson. But what I did realize was that I was pretty good at that whole blogging thing. And so I decided to hang out my shingle as a ghost blogger to see if anybody would be interested in hiring me to write their blog for them. And boy, howdy, were they ever. And that just took off. And it is my primary business now. And it's just grown and grown. And I'm so thankful because now I've more than doubled my magazine salary. And I only work 20 to 25 hours a week. So I get to spend most of my time with my now 4-year-old.
I love that. I think that's incredible. You're, you know, living the life that you wanted, that you decided you wanted as a mom, and doing so well.
It's been a straight shot to get here, but I'm here now, and that's what counts.
Definitely. So can you explain for our listeners who may not know what exactly a ghost blogger is? And then tacking on to that, I'm curious about, you know, you said once you advertise yourself as a ghost blogger, man, people were interested. They wanted that service. I'm curious to hear maybe what are some of the brands or companies or people that are really hiring for that service?
Sure. So a ghost blogger is honestly a term I think I made up. I mean, maybe some other people use it, but it's like a ghost writer for blogs. So what I do is I write blogs for other people's small businesses. And this is more common in corporate culture. I think lots of corporations will hire a writer specifically to manage their blog. I think it's less common in the small business realm where I am. I think there's this preconceived notion that if you are a small business, a micro business owner, a solopreneur, that you have to do your blog yourself, that there's something disingenuous about not doing it yourself. But I don't believe that to be true. And so I've really developed a niche of the micro business owner. A lot of my clients are what I call lifestyle entrepreneurs. So they're coaches or service providers of some kind. So I've worked with interior designers and health coaches. I've worked with a personal stylist. I've worked with people in the sort of business information community. And then I also have, one client who he's a major data analyst and strategist for major Fortune 500 companies. So it kind of runs the gamut, but I tend to focus on micro business owners and solopreneurs.
Do you tend to write all of their content, most of their content, or just a certain percentage that they're looking for because they need a little extra information on their blog, or how does that usually play out?
Yeah, so it depends on the client. I have a couple of clients for whom I do all kinds of projects. So I've written books, a book that's been physically published. I've written ebooks. I've written material that goes inside of courses, like e-courses. I write emails, you know, newsletters. But for the most part, people hire me to write their blogs. So, you know, one a week kind of thing. And then it just sort of evolves from there, the relationship with the particular client.
And I noticed on your website that you emphasize the fact that you make yourself become the blogger. You make sure that it's seamless, where nobody would recognize that they're reading the content produced by someone else. How do you do that so skillfully?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? You know, it's a skill I've always had. It's sort of a funny skill to have, but it's something that even as a kid, I wanted to be a fiction writer when I was a kid, still do. And when I was, say, in 8th, 9th, 10th grade, I would start writing stories and, you know, novels and things, and they would sound like whatever I was reading at the time, because I would be so influenced by whatever author I was reading at the time that my writing would start to sound like Douglas Adams or J.K. Rowling or whoever it might be that I was reading. And so it's just something that I've always been good at. I have distilled my process a little bit into what I call the voice identification process, which is what I help people with if they don't want to hire me to write, but they want help finding their voice. We go through that process. And what it really boils down to is finding the really small details that set you apart. And so sometimes that's a particular word you use, a particular phrase, you know, do you speak really colloquially or really in a sophisticated tone? Do you use a lot of metaphor and simile? So I kind of analyze all those things to find your voice or to help you find your voice, if that makes sense.
Oh, definitely. I definitely think that makes sense. And I was just thinking about when you said, you know, kind of the particular phrases, I've seen quite a few bloggers do that, and it really does help set them apart. You know, if they always say, or, you know, even just signing their blog at the end with a certain little phrase that's all theirs, or it definitely can set you apart in the online space.
Yeah. One good example I have of this is a woman came to me, and she was, she runs surfing camps for women in California, where it's like a spiritual experience. You go and you learn to surf, but it's also kind of about finding yourself. And her blog was so corporate, and I couldn't get over it. And when you talk to her on the phone, like, she would get into this space, and you could tell that she was a little bit woo-woo. She was very spiritual, but she also had all this surfer lingo that she could throw out there. And I was like, gosh, that sets you apart so dramatically to be able to say, like, hang 10 or whatever with authority. I mean, that people are going to remember that. So I really encouraged her to try to throw that kind of terminology and those kind of surfing metaphors into her blogging, because that's what's really going to set her apart. You know, people are not necessarily going to resonate with a really professional voice from someone who's supposed to be a spiritual teacher, if that makes sense.
Do you find a lot of people have trouble figuring out, okay, I'm one person in person, and then when they write, they're not conveying that adequately in their writing on their blog? Is that a common problem that you see?
Yes, it is, because I think a lot of us have gotten the voice trained out of us in school. And don't get me wrong, I loved English class, and I'm not knocking it, but we get trained to write in a certain way when we're in school. We get trained to write the 5-paragraph essay, or, you know, if you go to college and have to write, you have to write a certain way, or if you've been in the corporate world, you're trained to write in a very particular style. And so if then you come out of that into the entrepreneurial world, it's hard to retrain yourself. It's hard to find your voice if maybe you never were allowed to let go and just be yourself in your writing.
That's a great point. I can definitely see that. So we hear the terms copywriter or copy editor thrown around a lot. Can you explain a bit more what that means and what all is involved in that process?
Sure. So copy is anything written. So a copywriter is someone who produces anything written for you. So that could be the text on your website all the way through to your tweets or, you know, your ebook that you're going to sell or your course, anything. And then a copy editor obviously is just going to help you edit your copy. So it's a professional writer who's going to help you with anything you're producing for your business text-wise.
So you're technically, you're a ghost blogger and you're also really a copywriter and copy editor. You're kind of all of those things at one time.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly right. Ghost blogger is really just a cutesy name I made up for myself.
Yes. Cool. That's your persona. That's who you are online. So that's awesome.
Speaking of your online persona, I absolutely love that secret agent persona you have on your website. It is so clever. I have never seen anything like it that was carried through to everything so well. How did you, and for anybody listening, you have to check it out. She's got all these really cool pictures where she's like, it looks like she's a secret agent. How did you come up with that persona and theme, and how do you think it's helped your business to grow?
Sure. So I have to give mad props to my brand stylist. Her name is Sarah Uncalmo, and she was actually one of my very first ghost blogging clients. And as I got to know her business more, I knew that when I was ready to really invest in a nice website for myself, I needed to work with her because she has this amazing branding process. But she and I really are on the same page about brand and voice. So she very much believes that you come up with the hook, which is a major part of your voice, first, and the content first, and then everything else flows from that. So, you know, when she and I were working together, we came up with the idea that I'm your secret weapon for blogging, and so that secret agent noir 40s vibe all evolved out of that. I like to say it's me dialed up to 11, you know, because it's very much aspects of my personality, but really emphasized. So then once we had kind of the hook and the theme, which, by the way, I recommend people, if you're trying to find your voice for your business or your blog or anything else, sort of defining that hook, that one thing. It might be a statement, it might be a visual or an idea. That one thing that kind of everything else can hang from makes life so much easier. Because then, as you mentioned, so then my pictures came from that theme, and all the copy on my website has to do with that. So the very first thing it says on there is, are you writing your message in disappearing ink? So, you know, I'm going to help you create a message in it that's indelible, that will last forever. So even that came from that detective secret agent sort of concept. And so everything on there, down to the typewriter font that we used, comes from that hook, which was the first thing we had to come up with.
I have to agree with Sarah. I absolutely love it. It's so genius. And it really does set you apart because, you know, I know we see a lot in the, you know, mom blogger space or maybe, you know, Etsy seller space. And Sarah and I feel like we're prone to this as well, me probably more than her. But sometimes you just want to create something pretty and something that's on trend. But if you do that to the extreme, then there is nothing that sets you apart, you know, that makes it your brand. And yours, I go to your site at laceyboggs.com, and yeah, immediately it's like, it's sleek, it looks fabulous, but it also looks completely unique and completely you. So
yeah, and I think that that's important. I mean, even for you know, a mom blogger or an Etsy seller, like you said, like there's a certain aesthetic that comes to mind, and I think there's also a certain voice that comes to mind for a mom blogger. But you know, you think about the vast diversity of mom bloggers out there. Everyone from what's her name, Jen Hatmaker, all the way to Deuce or the blog S, you know,
right.
That's
yeah.
a wide range of voices within that same niche. So, you know, don't be afraid to stand out and find your own true voice that makes you unique, because that's what people come back for.
It seems like a big task to me to find that hook, like out of all the different things that you could think of or narrow down to. Do you have any tips for people to find that hook that would actually work for them?
Yes. So I think part of that is really, it's kind of a deep process. You know, you may have heard that phrase that like starting a business is like going through therapy. I think that's very true, because you kind of have to look inside and learn about yourself and learn about, you know, what you really want in order to find that brand and that hook that's going to help you stand out. And so what it comes down to for me is really figuring out your big why, you know, and that's usually twofold. And this is good advice for blogging as well, but I'll get to that in a second. So your big why is, why are you doing this? Like, what are you passionate about? What makes you come to work every day and enjoy it and love it? And then why are you doing this to serve your people? So what are they getting out of it? What are you getting out of it? And what are your audience getting out of it? And if you can answer those two things, you know, when I was doing mine, that idea of being the secret weapon could have gone two ways, because we were talking about it being a ghost blogger, being a secret weapon. I could hide. I could be behind a mask. I could not have any pictures of myself. I could be anonymous. And that was really, really tempting, to, I'll tell you the truth. But, you know, going through it with Sarah was really, she helped me realize that what I wanted to get out of it was bigger than that. I wanted to create something bigger than being the anonymous writer behind the screen. And so she really encouraged me that we needed to have these photos that were, you know, they're like glamour shots. They're like, I don't look like that today. Let me just tell you that right now. But, you know, I had to kind of get over that hump, because that I wanted something bigger for my business. And I also wanted something bigger for my readers and my clients to believe that they could trust me, that I had a certain amount of expertise. And so I'm trying to come back to my point, I promise. But it all kind of helps you figure out your bigger why when you are looking at your brand. So, you know, I think it really does have to come from a place within you. It can't be just manufactured whole cloth. It really has to come from something you love and believe in. And so if you center it in that why you're doing this in the first place, it'll come out beautifully.
Just laughing at the fact that you don't look like that right now.
No, I really don't.
Yeah, I'm disappointed, Lacey. You don't have a trench coat on right now.
Bright red lipstick.
I actually went through this phase, like right after the website were released, where I was like, felt like anytime I was on video or like snapping a selfie or something, that I had to like live up to those pictures. I had to get over that pretty quickly.
Yeah,
that would be hard to get dolled up every time you were tempted.
Yeah, the hair and makeup guy does not live with me, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, Lacey, I just read a great article on your site about epic content, where you said that depending on your business model, having the right kind of traffic is better than having a ton of traffic. Could you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah. I'm getting a little controversial there, I think. But so what I was talking about is that there's a lot of marketers out there who will teach you how to get, you know, 100,000 visits from one blog post or whatever, you know, drive traffic with these templates of how to write blog posts. And I don't disagree with them. I don't think that that's wrong necessarily. But I think, like I said, depending on your business model, it might not be the right kind of traffic. So let me give you an example. So if you are an Etsy producer and you produce a product and you make something, I'm trying to think of a good example here. So I have a client recently who makes weighted blankets for the special needs community. So she makes blankets that are heavier to help children and adults with autism and other special needs. And so let's say she went out and wrote some great list post that was like, you know, 70 ways to make bedtime easier, you know, something like that. And it went viral and it was great. And everybody was so excited and she got hundreds of thousands of hits. Well, what percentage of those hits are really going to be her niche? What percentage of those people are going to want and need a weighted blanket? Probably some, a few, but out of that, you know, 100,000 hits she gets, I'm going to guess it's not going to be a huge percentage just because she's in a very specialized niche, right? So that kind of traffic is not bad necessarily, but it's also not the right kind of traffic that she should always be focusing on. Instead, if she got a guest post on a major mom blog that talked about children with special needs, now that traffic is going to be much more qualified because everybody who reads that blog either has a child with a special need or knows someone who does or is related to someone who does. And so every single one of those people is going to be pre-qualified to be a customer of hers. They're already right in her niche. So my point to that was saying that creating content for the masses is not necessarily everybody's best game plan. So some bloggers are blogging as their business model. Blogging is their business model. And probably some people in your audience, blogging is your business model. So if you sell advertising or maybe you sell a few ebooks or products, but your main revenue driver is your blog, then those kinds of bigger posts that get a zillion views and, you know, those big list posts that people are always telling you how to do might be a good source of traffic. If, on the other hand, you are blogging to support a business, like you produce a product, I'm blogging to support my service business, then you might want to be a little more targeted in how you spend your time. Does that make sense?
Definitely. And I think a lot of people do get confused. They think or they assume maybe that if I get enough eyeballs on my thing, on my site, on my product, on my whatever, then I will get a lot of sales, a lot of, you know, ad revenue, whatever. But that's really not always true. I mean, I know we've seen it for example, being on the front page of Etsy with a product. And, you know, we've done that before. And it is great. And you get favorites. And maybe you get a sale or two. But it's just like you said, it's not necessarily all of the right eyes.
Yeah. So. And I have a really good example of this. You know, so when I was doing my food blogging, when I was invited to guest blog on a Martha Stewart magazine website, I thought, like, my deal was made, right? I thought, like, this is it. I'm done. Yeah. You know, shut it down. We're done. And I wrote 6 posts before the magazine went under, unfortunately. But I like to think it was not because of my blogging that it went under. But I was not able to track a single opt-in to my email list from that opportunity. On the other hand, I wrote 1 guest post for a blog called And Then We Saved, which is not huge. It doesn't have, I mean, it's big, but it doesn't have a huge, huge, you know, it's not nationally recognized or anything like that. And from that single post, I doubled my list. I got over 600 opt-ins. Wow. Because it was more targeted. It was speaking exactly to the right audience.
That's a great example of exactly what you're talking about. And I did love how you differentiated in that article about if your business is your blog and the ad revenue is your source of income, then yeah, traffic for traffic's sake makes sense. But most of us are blogging because we have a product or a service that we're trying to support. So it's a great reminder because it's so easy to get caught up in the traffic game.
Yeah. And it's a good distinction because I get lots of clients who want to be in Huffington Post in particular, but, you know, who want to be on whatever the big website is for their niche. And I have to say, in my experience, those really big websites don't convert well. They just don't. They don't turn into opt-ins and they don't turn into sales.
And we've actually seen that from someone in our community had said the same thing, that she was like, yeah, it was great that I was on HuffPost, but it's more something nice to say versus, you know, like seeing true results.
Right. And I'm not saying you never want to do that. I mean, of course, there's a certain thing called social proof where people are going to believe that you're more serious or that you're more of an expert in your field when you say that you've been on Huffington Post or whatever the big blog is in your niche. Or if you say you've been on the front page of Etsy or whatever, that there's a certain cachet that goes with that. But you need to just remember that you're doing it for that and not necessarily for the opt-ins or for, you know, the sales.
So while we're on the topic of, you know, things that kind of will help bloggers to maybe focus in and be more effective, do you have any other tips for bloggers on how to just make their lives easier, make blogging more efficient?
I have a zillion tips. No, yes, I love, I mean, this is my favorite topic. So I think my biggest tip for being more efficient and effective at the same time is to start using an editorial calendar. So this is something I brought over from the magazine world. And, you know, when you work for a magazine or a newspaper, they have an editorial calendar laid out long before they write anything. For magazines, sometimes it's a year in advance. That's why, like, if you follow a magazine on Twitter or Facebook, they'll be taking picture of, like, Christmas stuff in July because they're doing it 6 months to a year in advance. They're writing their Christmas pieces right now. You don't have to go that far out as a blogger. And you don't even necessarily have to write things in advance. But I think having that big picture plan is incredibly valuable. So let me just give you an example. Let's say that you know that your product is big for back to school. You know, that's a big time for you to sell things. Then what you want to be looking at is 6 to 8 weeks before back to school, you want to start blogging about it and not necessarily directly blogging about your product, but getting it in people's minds why that might be good. So, you know, you might do a blog post about the summer brain drain, or you might do a blog post about, you know, getting kids back on a schedule when they get back into school, you know, that last few weeks before school starts. All these things will start getting them in the mindset. And then you can start generating desire. You can put what I call these little priming phrases in your blog saying, you know, when you do get back to school, you're going to need this XYZ thing that I sell. And by the time back to school runs around and you're ready to run this big promotion, people are not only ready to buy, but eager and willing, like, take my money. Where is it? So you can build that kind of anticipation around an event like that. Or if you're launching a new product, you can build desire and anticipation. And even if you just have, say, a service where you're not ever, like, launching something new, you can create these sales cycles even with that and say, okay, now I'm going to do this. And it doesn't necessarily require you to discount your services or anything else. It's just this natural rhythm of promoting yourself through your content and that drives sales. I have a good example of this for myself. So I have a product called Blogstorm, which is where it's a course where I help people build their editorial calendar. And the course promises that you'll build an editorial calendar for the next 6 months. So when June rolled around, I thought, oh, this is perfect. You know, the next 6 months of the year, we'll get it all planned out before July, and then they'll have the second half of the year going. So using my system, my, you know, blog and an email, I promoted it. I said, we're doing this in June. You know, it's an evergreen product, so people can buy it anytime they want. This was not a new thing. There was no discount. There was nothing exciting and new happening, except it was June. And I generated almost $2,000 in unplanned revenue from, I think, 2 blog posts and 2 emails. So it can be very, very useful to have this big picture plan to help you drive your revenue. Because if you're not blogging to support your business, what are you doing it for? That's how I feel.
That makes a lot of sense. That really does. What if people are having trouble figuring out ideas, brainstorming those topics to include on their blog as maybe a lead up or to fill out their editorial calendar?
Sure. So that's really what Blogstorm was designed for, is to help people brainstorm those ideas, because that's a problem I hear from people all the time. It's like, I don't know what to write about, especially your product-based businesses. People get really confused about what they should be writing about. You know, should I just be talking about my product all the time? The answer is no, by the way. But yeah, you can look to a lot of different sources. One really great, I'll give you a great tip. One really great way to do this is to ask your followers or your subscribers what they're struggling with most. And so you can do this in a couple of places. If you have a Facebook page, you can do it there. If you are running an email list, what you can do is, you know how you have to have double opt-ins for your email? That last email they get where it says, thank you, you're all signed up, you've opted in. You can edit that email to ask that question. You can say, you know, thank you so much for signing up for my email list. If you have 2 minutes, hit reply to this email and tell me, what are you struggling with most right now about whatever your niche is. And even if you're selling a product, so going back to my client with the weighted blankets, she could say, you know, what are you struggling with most? Even if it doesn't have anything to do with weighted blankets, she's going to learn about her audience. So, you know, if you sell jewelry or pottery or anything like that, you might have to tweak the phrasing just a little bit. A lot of times people who sell, you know, quote unquote luxury items think that they don't solve a problem, but you do. You just have to figure out what that problem is. So with jewelry, it might be like fashion or style or accessorizing. With something like decorative pottery or paintings, it might be like decorating your home or finding your personal style, things like that. So there's always a problem you're solving, even if you have kind of a luxury product. And asking your clients what they're struggling with will give you an endless supply of things to write about.
That's a great idea. I think you're spot on with that. And another thing I've heard on along those lines is that hearing from your customers and your audience in their voice, it helps you to hone your voice when you're writing and when you're explaining the benefits of your product. Is you've pinpointed exactly what their problem is and then how you can solve it.
That's a really good point, because a lot of times we get into the place of being the expert. And so we start talking about things in our language, our expert language. So if I just said to you, you know, oh, you need an editorial calendar, you'd be like, great, Lacey, what does that mean? You know, because that's my expert language talking. So if I say, hey, you really need a plan and you need a strategy to figure out how what you're talking about ties into what you want to sell, you'd be like, yes, that makes a lot more sense. Or even if I just said, hey, yeah, you need some really good strategies for figuring out what to talk about. That to me, so even though I'm selling you an editorial calendar, the problem you have is not knowing what to talk about. So it's all connected, but you have to find the language that your clients are using to talk about the problem, as opposed to the language you know as the expert.
That really does make a lot of sense. I wanted to circle back to, you mentioned product-based businesses have a hard time especially determining what to blog about. Mm-hmm. And I agree. We've seen that question pop up quite a bit in our audience. I know you said it's not the product all the time, but do you have maybe a few more ideas of things a product-based business could focus on in their blog?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a technique I call thinking sideways. So you kind of have to think sideways, sort of shift your perspective from your product to where that product fits in their bigger lifestyle. So what I mean by that is there's something that your client or customer or subscriber aspires to, right? We all aspire to something. And if you can figure out where you fall in that bigger aspiration, you can decide what other topics you can talk about that are kind of tangentially related to your product, but help your customer feel like she's reaching towards that aspiration. So I wrote a blog post about this recently because I got so, like, I almost fell out of my chair. I was on Tumblr and there was a sponsored post, and it was a relatively famous food blogger that I recognized with a recipe for chicken shawarma. And so I'm reading this recipe, and I realize as I'm reading it that it was sponsored by Fancy Feast Cat Food. Thank you for laughing, because I felt like this was the most ridiculous thing I had ever seen. seen in my life. Like, I immediately went to cat food shawarma. I mean, that's where I went in my head. And, like, the very tenuous thread they had was she said at the end of the thread that, like, while she was enjoying this chicken shawarma, her lovely cat so-and-so was enjoying the chicken such-and-such from Fancy Feast. So I was like, no, this is wrong. So I wrote this whole blog post about what Fancy Feast should have done if they had hired me for their strategy. But they're not totally wrong. I can see where they've gotten to here, because they're trying to address a lifestyle, right? They've decided that their customer is interested in maybe home cooking, kind of that Martha Stewart-ish person, right? So they've gone to a popular food blogger and asked for a recipe. Okay, that's where they lost me. But if they had just shifted that slightly, if they've gone to like a popular DIY craft blogger, and she had written a post about, you know, creating this adorable little cat toy out of a champagne cork and some feathers, totally would have worked for me. I would have been there right there with them. Or if they'd had, you know, like a product post where somebody, some, you know, Nate Berkus or somebody was talking about the best cat beds to fit with your decor, I'm with you. I can go there with you. But talking about like recipes and cat food just didn't work for me. So they were thinking too far sideways. But the point is, you want to, you know, shift slightly from the product, but still make it so that the connection is close enough that somebody like me isn't going, what? No. So, you know, I had a woman come who sells jewelry on Etsy, and we were talking about it, and she didn't know what to write about. And she sells kind of this, I don't even know how to describe it exactly. It's kind of like, it makes me think of rockabilly. It makes me think of rock and roll. Her shop name is like Red Scorpio. So it's very sort of a little bit punk rock, you know? And so I was suggesting that she talk about kind of her aesthetic, her lifestyle. So she immediately came up with like 15 ideas. She was saying, oh, you know, coloring books for grownups are really popular right now, and I think my people would like that. Or macrame is coming back, and I think people would like that. And so she had all these ideas about that were sort of beyond jewelry, but that described this lifestyle that her jewelry customers would be aspiring to.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And as soon as you, when you mentioned rockabilly and all of that and the adult coloring books, I was like, oh yeah, I know that.
You know who that is.
People that's, mm-hmm. That's like really into adult coloring books right now. Like it makes sense.
Yeah.
That really helps too, thinking about, okay, what does your ideal customer aspire to? What is the lifestyle they want? Yeah. That's a great tip.
As a second example, my weighted blankets girl, you know, she was freaking out because she's not really an expert on special needs. She's not an expert on the disease or even on treating it. She sews blankets. That's what she does. Mm-hmm. But what we decided for her was that she could mediate the conversation. So she could bring experts onto her blog. She could interview people. She could ask for guest posts. She could, you know, talk about advocacy things, even from a position of being a layperson or who's somebody who's just interested in it or an advocate. She could mediate that conversation. And I think that's an important distinction too. You don't have to be the expert in that lifestyle. You can just sort of curate the information.
That is true.
Oh,
no,
go ahead,
Beth Ann.
No, you go.
No, I'm sure you'll have a better comment. You go.
No. I think you were going to say something similar to me. So you go.
And I bet you'd say it better, so you say it.
You guys are adorable.
We're not always.
What did you say, Sarah?
I just think you have a better way of commenting.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes we both have like on and off days. It's kind of funny. I think at least one of us is always on, so it works.
That's good.
Now I forget what we were supposed to be commenting about.
I remember. I absolutely agree with that, Lacey, because when Sarah and I started this podcast a year ago, that was the exact angle that we were taking. We were, you know, we had tried to like grow a little mom blog. We had been selling on Etsy for a bit. We had some experience to bring to the table, but we certainly didn't call ourselves, you know, business experts by any means. But we thought, you know what? There needs to be a place where we interview moms with great businesses, and we are that mediator who gathers the great advice and, you know, puts it in one place and creates a community. So,
yeah.
And so far it's been working out.
I think that's super smart. The only thing I would caution people is to stay away from the one problem I do see people having, and remember who your audience is. A lot of times I see people, they're like, okay, what am I the expert in? Well, I'm the expert in this thing that I do. And so they start talking about that thing that they do, but they're really talking to other experts. So the example I always use for this is a photographer. So let's say a photographer wants to start blogging, and she says, what do I know about? I know about photography. So she starts talking about her shots in a whole lot of detail. She says what lens she used and how she did the lights and what studio setup she used. And maybe she gets people commenting and liking it, but they're all other photographers. Well, other photographers are not going to buy her service. Mm-hmm. So she really needs to be speaking to the people who are going to hire her as a photographer. So instead of talking about the lenses she uses, maybe she talks about how to pick out the outfits to wear, or, you know, six poses you should ask for in your next toddler shoot, or whatever it might be. But she needs to be speaking to the people who are going to hire her, as opposed to speaking to other experts in her field.
Ooh, I like that. I could see how it would be so easy.
So easy, yes.
A different path, and you don't even know you're talking to the wrong people you're trying to target.
Yeah, because
just people, you're so used to that.
Right, people have heard write what you know, and so they do, and then they end up talking to the wrong audience by accident.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah, that's true. Ooh, that'd be hard. That'd be so easy to do.
Yeah.
So I know, Lacey, when you first contacted us, in your email, you mentioned that with your business, you try and have a reduced work schedule because you are also a full-time mom with your daughter. So how do you successfully control your hours to make sure that you can grow your business and spend time with her as well?
Yeah, I think that's been one of the scariest and best things I've had to do, because when that is your priority, you have to say no. And that is scary, especially when you're first starting. To say no to a paying client is terrifying. But it was something I had to learn how to do. And I am so grateful that I did, because somehow it was like the universe heard it. And it was like, as soon as I started saying no, I have a backlog. I'm booked out months in advance for special projects. I've had to hire two additional writers to help me. And so it's become a really, really good thing. I had to just make that a priority, because I kept thinking to myself, you know, if this is why I'm doing this, then that has to be my priority. You know, this is, I could go back to work full time if I want to work full time, and it would be a lot easier. But, you know, if my priority is to spend time with my daughter so that she's not in daycare all the time, then that needs to be my priority. And it's scary because of saying no. It's scary because you have to charge more to make your time worth it. And I got a lot of really good advice when I was first starting out of ways to make that a little easier on myself. Like, for example, I had a coach tell me to set little mini goals. So, like, every time you get three clients, raise your rates by $25. And that was much more doable to me than being like, oh, I'm $200 more now, or whatever it was, because it could just sort of inch up slowly and incrementally, and it was a lot more comfortable for me. I get uncomfortable when I start thinking about how much I'm worth, which is not the right way to think about it, but that's kind of where my brain goes. And so I needed those kind of little baby steps in between.
I'd like that idea for inching up your prices, because I do think a lot of us women, we do hesitate to raise our prices, or you don't want to, I don't know, step on toes, offend people. Mm-hmm. People think you're pretending you're so much better than you really are.
Right. Like, well, and I had to really embrace the fact that what I do is a luxury service. And that was part of why we took the tact we did when we did my website. You know, those pictures are very glamorous because I'm saying visually, this is a luxury service. This is not cheap. You can go get a blog on Fiverr for $5, and that's not what I do. And so, you know, I'm setting myself apart in that way. But I had to own it.
You did in those photos. You owned those photos.
Oh, yeah. Well, Lacey, as we wrap up today, we always like to end with either a funny or adorable mom moment. Do you have anything to share?
Oh, man. So many. Let me just think. There was this internet meme that was going around where it was like a questionnaire to ask your kid. You know, so you were just supposed to ask them all these questions and not prompt them or try to get them to say different answers. And they were things like, you know, what does mommy do for a job? You know, what's mommy's favorite thing to do? And some of them were really funny. You know, she would come up with things, but it was really some of them. The wisdom of her was so touching. You know, one of them was, what makes mommy happy? And she said, working. And at first I was like, oh man, like really? she thinks that's what makes me happy. But then she kept going and she was like, yeah, you love to work because it helps you support our family and buy us good food and keep the house nice and da da da. And I was like, oh, aww. She gets it. Like, she really gets it. She's four. And the last one was, what makes you proud of your mom? Oh, gosh, I'm going to get a little clubbed. The last question was, what makes you proud of your mommy? And she said that she works so hard.
Aww.
And it was just, I was like, wow, you know, that's amazing. And that's really what I want her to see. I feel like I'm a much better role model for her as an entrepreneur than I could ever have been, you know, at my magazine job. Cause I was just exhausted all the time and emotionally drained. And, you know, that was just such a wonderful affirmation for me that I'm in the right place and doing the right thing. If she can see that it makes me happy, then I'm doing something right.
Absolutely. That's such a sweet story. I love those answers that she came up with. Could you tell our listeners one last time, Lacey, where they can find you?
Sure. I am at lacyboggs.com. That's LacyBoggs. And you can find my blog there. You can also find – I have a free membership library that anybody can access. It's at lacyboggs.com/library. All you have to do is sign up, and a lot of the resources I mentioned today – are in there. There's a free editorial calendar template. There's ebooks about building your editorial calendar and finding your voice. So it really is my mission to help make this easier and more efficient for all of you guys. So that's why I make a lot of this information free. So I'd really love it if you'd join and come see what I've got.
That's great. Thank you so much, Lacey.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
For the show notes, head to brilliantbusinessmoms.com/96. I want to tell you guys about an exciting new product we just released. It's called the Get Found Guide to Etsy. The Get Found Guide to Etsy not only helps you get found in Etsy search, it helps you get found by your ideal customer, which translates into more sales. This new product was Beth Ann's baby, and she has created an awesome PDF guide to help you get found in Etsy search. It includes 3 worksheets and examples, plus she has recorded over 4 hours of video tutorials. This is not just some theoretical guide on how you might be able to get found on Etsy search. This is a step-by-step action plan that can show you how to rank for competitive keywords. If you've listened to some of Beth Ann's previous episodes on Etsy SEO, or if you've interacted with her in the Facebook group, you'll know that she really knows her stuff. And the Get Found Guide to Etsy is a comprehensive package that will show you exactly what you need to do to get found, and therefore, get sales. If this sounds like exactly what you need, then head to brilliantbusinessmoms.com/guide, and you can get additional details there. We're so glad you chose to join us today on the Brilliant Business Moms podcast. Now it's your turn to head out there and be brilliant.